Support for Quality of Life comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.
This is Quality of Life, Valley Public Radio's look at the people and the issues affecting the way we live in the San Joaquin Valley. Here is your host, Joe Moore.
Well, hello and welcome. Ask most high school students about the end of slavery in the U.S., and you're likely to hear about the Emancipation Proclamation and the 13th Amendment to the Constitution. But nearly 150 years after the country formally abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, it remains an issue, now going by a new name, human trafficking. From forced labor to child sex trafficking, this is an issue often hidden in the shadows of society and a particularly dark side of the immigration debate. Yesterday, the U.S. State Department released its annual report on human trafficking across the globe, and for the second year in a row, the United States was included in the list of nations where the problem exists. Here's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
Today we are releasing a new report that ranks 184 countries, including our own. Unfortunately, because of the ease of transportation and the global communications that can reach deep into villages with promises and pictures of what a better life might be, we now see that more human beings are exploited than before.
Last year, federal prosecutions for human trafficking reached a new high, with charges filed against 181 individuals, resulting in 141 convictions. The State Department estimates that some 27 million people worldwide are victims of modern-day slavery, with as many as 100,000 in the U.S. California ranks in the top three states in the union when it comes to human trafficking, according to the state's Emergency Management Agency. The problem also exists here in Central California, and here to talk about the issue, we have two guests. First, we have Rhonna Bright. She is the project coordinator with Central Valley Against Human Trafficking and the Central Valley Freedom Coalition. Rhonna, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
And we are also joined in studio by Fresno City Council member from District 7, Clint Olivier. Clint, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
As always, we'd like to know what you, our listeners, think about this issue. If you have experience with this issue in some way, shape, or form, or some thoughts on human trafficking and what government, what individuals can do to help solve this problem that impacts so many, please give us a call. The phone number is 559-275-8989. You can also call toll-free 800-224-8989 or online at kvpr.org. Rhonna, I'll turn to you to begin our discussion here about human trafficking. Is this a new problem? This is a new term, at least it might be new to many listeners. Is this something that is new, and is it growing here in Central California?
It's not a new issue. I mean, slavery has been around since our human existence. Human trafficking, yes, is a new term within the last 10 years or so. And I think that the problem, because we've brought more attention to it, that is why it seems like it's growing. Although I do believe that it is growing simply because I believe that traffickers are now understanding that there's a huge profit margin in the trafficking of human beings as opposed to something like the trafficking of drugs or the trafficking of weapons. So the profit margin is much different when you're talking about human trafficking than other trafficking.
Give us an idea of what exactly we're talking about here. There's a number of different situations that individuals who are victims of human trafficking can fall into. What are some of the situations, perhaps?
Some of those would include domestic servitude, so being forced to provide domestic services such as housekeeping, cooking, child care, things of that nature. Also, commercial sex trafficking, so that would be the trafficking of minors under the age of 18 or the trafficking of adults over the age of 18 using such methodology as force, fraud, or coercion to force them into that type of servitude. And then also we've had one instance here locally of panhandling, so forced panhandling. We have absolutely some, you know, labor violations that may or may not include trafficking in our agricultural fields. We have things such as restaurant work, you know, doing dishwashing, things like that in the back where maybe you don't even see the people in the back. So those are the things that are happening even locally.
Councilmember Olivia, you've been active on this issue for several months now since you joined the city council earlier this year. Tell us about your thoughts and your experience and why this is a priority for you in District 7 in Fresno.
Well, this is something that wasn't an issue during the campaign. It wasn't something that ever came up, really. And then when I took office, it kind of presented itself to me. Basically, I got involved because naturally, being a city council member wanting to improve my district, the entire city, I have the central corridor of Fresno. I have about a mile on each side of Blackstone, and it runs from Bullard on down to, I mean, we end up, makes a big L in the middle of the city, just to kind of give you an idea where we are, that ends up at Peach and Tulare area. So it's this huge swath of city, but right there in the heart of the city, along Blackstone, between Gettysburg and Shields, there's a huge amount of prostitution that we're dealing with, streetwalkers that are playing a part in the destruction of commerce there. I've had two, and Ron has been at my meetings with my business owners along Blackstone, and we're talking about family places. There's a Sears and an Acapulco and a Carl's Jr. and a post office and tire shops and auto parts and these kinds of places people are not going to anymore. Folks are choosing to shop elsewhere because they don't want to put up with the streetwalkers, and also there's urban blight there, as far as we have a lot of panhandlers in that area, and we have and some crime that's going on there. So the business owners have had it, and I've had a series of meetings with them to try and figure out, to pinpoint the problem. But where I've been drawn in when it comes to where the prostitution has drawn me in, I've learned, and Rana has been a big part of educating me, and we also have some other community groups too, that it's not just streetwalkers, that it's this forced, it's a commercial sex trade in human beings. And this is occurring in our community. And I'll let Rana speak more about that, because she can speak more articulately about it than I can, because I'm still learning too. But, you know, the exact number of people who are forced into this in our community. It's not just prostitutes walking the streets. It's the massage parlors that have just sprung up everywhere in our city, in all parts of our city. These massage parlors, some of them are, or a large number of them are being staffed by people who are being traded, who they live in these massage parlors. So, excuse me, not traded, but trafficked. So, I mean, it's an all-encompassing issue, and it's very important. You know, and I'll wrap it up so somebody else can talk, but one of our business owners operates a motel, and things are so bad on Blackstone that this person was explaining to us at the last meeting that people go there, people who are from other countries and other states, they're on their way to Yosemite, they stay there and they go, oh my goodness, they look at the surrounding area, they go, oh, this is horrible. And not only do they check out, but they call the corporate office. This person is in danger of losing their franchise and access to that reservation system, that 800 number that's their lifeblood. I mean, if this is happening at this one place, it's got to be happening at other places too along Blackstone there. So this is the spiritual and the geographic heart of our city, and it's in decay. So something has to be done. Obviously, I want to clean up our city and my district, but I mean, the byproduct of that is we're going to help these women and these girls get out of this human trafficking and get out of prostitution.
Turning back to Rana Bright, again, the project coordinator for Central Valley Against Human Trafficking and the Central Valley Freedom Coalition with the Fresno County Economic Opportunities Commission. We've talked about prostitution. Councilmember Olivier has described that as a problem in his district. Is this a case of, if we had the Venn diagram on radio, we have the two circles overlapping. We have human trafficking and prostitution, and there's overlap between those two. Talk a little more about the fact that when we're talking about human trafficking, it's that's part of the picture, but it's beyond that as well, as I understand.
Right. You know, one of the things that we with Central Valley Against Human Trafficking and the Central Valley Freedom Coalition, when we talk about human trafficking and we're in a discussion that involves prostitution, the topic of prostitution as well, what we're trying to do is separate those two. So that's what I'm here for, is to make sure that we're using the proper terminology and we're validating the actual victims of trafficking. And so on Blackstone, it's very common to drive down Blackstone, you know, and see, you know, women on the sidewalks, you know, doing their stroll. But what we need to remember and to become aware of is they're not necessarily there voluntarily. They may look like they're there voluntarily, but we need to have some awareness that there's a very good likelihood that they are being forced in some way to do that stroll and to do that work. And then also the other part of it is there are minor girls that are working on Blackstone as well. They may not look like minor girls if you just look at them, but in fact they are minors under the age of 18. And so that's really the population that I'm most concerned about, is the girls that are under the age of 18, when we have consent laws in our state as far as consensual sex, and yet they are being forced to provide commercial sex over and over and over again to however many men per day, and then all of a sudden they're criminalized as a prostitute, when in fact they're a victim of trafficking. So yeah, there's some overlap there, and that's, you know, one of the great things about working together on this issue is we're able to work, you know, on our separate issues, but also together with that overlap.
We're talking about human trafficking on Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio today. Again, you can email us at talk@kvpr.org with your thoughts. You can also tweet us online. Our Twitter handle is @KVPR. And you can call us at 559-275-8989 or toll-free 800-224-8989. Rana, turning back to the victims of human trafficking, is this largely a situation where the victims are immigrants to this country, people who how do they wind up in this situation? Paint a picture of how that happens.
Okay. I think that there is a thought, maybe a stereotype even, that that victims of trafficking are immigrants, and that's not necessarily true. That in fact we also have U.S. citizens that are being trafficked as well. And again, going back to the minor girls, that's the face of U.S. citizen victims of human trafficking are minor girls in the commercial sex industry and being forced to do that. So, you know, the estimate is between 100,000 to 300,000 minor girls being trafficked in our country that are U.S. citizens. Now, we do have some estimates that up to 18,000 to 20,000 people are brought across the borders into this country annually for purposes of trafficking as well. So, again, we definitely have an immigrant population that's being trafficked, but we also have U.S. citizens that are being trafficked.
How widespread is the issue in Central California, in Fresno, in the surrounding areas here, in the South Valley? To what degree do we have data on the extent of human trafficking here?
We have we've been in place now, my project, for 18 months. And in 18 months, we have identified and provided services to 36 victims of trafficking. And that includes in Fresno County and a couple from Tulare County as well. So, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, that's not a lot of people that we've identified. But actually, it's a tremendous amount that we've actually identified, because it's such a hidden crime, because we just go through our life not realizing that there's people around us that are enslaved. So having the ability to identify 36 victims and actually provide them with services and help them get out of that situation is a huge outcome of 18 months of hard work. And we just, you know, prior to 18 months ago, we weren't talking about human trafficking in this area at all. There was nobody was talking about it. I started the conversation and we went forward. And so as we continue going on, I expect those numbers to rapidly increase.
Turning back to Councilmember Clint Olivier from District 7 in Fresno, to what degree is the city approaching this problem and looking at enforcement, prosecution, you know, dealing with law and order in trying to, in addition to Rana's group providing services, how is the city adapting to meet this the awareness, the increasing awareness of this increasing problem?
Well, we have some news to report on that front. The city, during the budget process, is happy to announce the creation of a graffiti and prostitution prosecutor. And this is someone, well, I worked with District 6 Councilmember Lee Brand on kind of hammering this out. The council voted for it overwhelmingly, so now it's a done deal, and the city's moving forward. And in July, this person is going to be hired and begin their work to prosecute graffiti, taggers, and also prostitution-related crimes. Now, I'm asking the city attorney and also other city leaders to sit down and have a meeting with my office staff and Rana and other activists in the community so that we can craft how this person is going to what kinds of crimes they're going to prosecute as a prostitution prosecutor. Because I think that it's important that we remember, okay, we can pick women and girls up off the streets and haul them off to the police department and book them into the county jail where they will be released along with pretty much everyone else within a number of hours. So you take someone who's probably completely strung out on drugs, who has been beaten and abused physically and emotionally from the time they were a small child up until now, and clog the courts and the jail system with these people. Or maybe there's a strategy where we can focus on pimps and those people who patronize prostitutes and take advantage of this situation. So maybe – and I'm just – throwing ideas out because no meeting has been held yet because we're in the very nascent stages of even discussing this. But instead of bogging down this new prosecutor with 75 files of street girls, maybe we could focus on 10 files on that person's desk of people who patronize prostitutes and the pimps who traffic them and control them. So this is a discussion that we have to have. I think it's a very important discussion because it's going to determine where we're going to go as a community.
We're talking about human trafficking today on Quality of Life, and Clint Olivier talks about the efforts to prosecute graffiti and prostitution crimes. What about prosecuting? Have there been any prosecutions locally on human trafficking specific? Human trafficking-related crimes and offenses, those who are responsible for putting these folks in such terrible involuntary conditions?
Locally, there's not prosecutions of just straight human trafficking. What you find is there's prosecutions of other kind of related crimes. The crime of human trafficking, very difficult to prove because you do have to have a victim who's willing to cooperate and testify in court. And that's very difficult. These are victims just like any other victim of a crime, except that they've been repeatedly traumatized. So what we find is there's prosecutions of such things as pimping and pandering, which, once again, if it's a pimp, it's a trafficker. It's the same thing. There's labor violation crimes, other false imprisonment or kidnapping or just other related charges that are prosecuted as such that may actually have involved human trafficking. But, again, that particular crime is very difficult to prove. So there is – I know that there's a case in federal court right now, and it was definitely a trafficking case. I believe that one of the charges is trafficking, but there's also related charges that she's trying to prosecute as well. And so then the other arm that we want to talk about, too, is the Fresno Police Department has a human trafficking task force, a dedicated human trafficking task force. So here in our city, we have these phenomenal resources, and we're very, very blessed, and we're very lucky to have, you know, the project that we have at EOC Sanctuary and Youth Services, Central Valley Against Human Trafficking. We have the Fresno Police Department Human Trafficking Task Force. We have a faith-based coalition, Justice Coalition. We have Councilman Olivier as well. So we have a tremendous amount of collaboration and cooperation here locally to address human trafficking, and that's something that's you don't find very often.
And this is for the first time.
Absolutely.
That we've had this kind of coalition. And I can tell you that the police department is formulating a strategy. They're going to – this is – I mean, everyone is peaking at the right time on this. And so when the police department – I know that they're close to coming out with a new attack plan on this. So, I mean, really, this is really terrific that we have all these different entities that are coming together at the same time on this. It's just fantastic, and I think it's going to make a difference.
We're joined in our studio today by Fresno City Councilmember Clint Olivier from District 7 and also Ronna Bright, Project Coordinator with Central Valley Against Human Trafficking and the Central Valley Freedom Coalition with the Fresno County Economic Opportunities Commission. We'll be back with more on our discussion of human trafficking and talk about the way out and what services are offered to victims of human trafficking. And we'll also take your calls. Remember, the phone number is 559-275-8989 or toll-free 800-224-8989. Back in just a moment. You're listening to a rebroadcast of today's edition of Quality of Life. When you hear the phone numbers, please don't call. You're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. My name is Joe Moore, and I'm joined in our studio today by Clint Olivier, Fresno City Council member from District 7, and Ronna Bright. She is the project coordinator with Central Valley Against Human Trafficking, among other titles. We're talking about the issue of human trafficking in our community. Yesterday, the State Department released its annual report on human trafficking, and for the second year in a row, the United States is listed on its own report. A country with a serious human trafficking problem. The State Department estimates as many as 100,000 individuals in the U.S. Others say the number is actually much higher. The State Department also says over 27 million individuals throughout the world are the victims of involuntary servitude, whether it's sex trafficking or forced labor or some other type of human trafficking. It's a growing issue, and it's one that's not only growing but also growing in attention. And Ronna, your group is doing a lot to try to raise awareness of this. You had a conference earlier this year, the second annual human trafficking conference for Central California. What do you see taking away from that conference? Do you see more attention, more unity and purpose throughout Central San Joaquin Valley in addressing this issue?
Certainly. I say pretty often that human trafficking is a very hot topic these days. There's a lot of attention on human trafficking. And with that attention, unfortunately, is a lot of misinformation. So part of what I do on a daily basis is, you know, providing lots of training, technical assistance, et cetera, to anybody, to organizations, individual people, whoever it is that needs some information. Yes, from the conference and some of the other work that I do, there's certainly many different organizations, many different systems that are starting to realize that they actually do serve in some capacity victims of trafficking. And so I'm finding that a lot of different systems, government systems, organizations, et cetera, are trying to, you know, develop their policies and develop their protocol on human trafficking and what to do. And I'm really one of the things that we work in the field of human trafficking across this country is what we're trying to do is do something a little bit different than maybe what's been done in the past with other issues. And that is we're trying to coordinate a little bit more and not have, you know, these standalone, you know, policies and, you know, that are trying to do everything, you know, all by themselves as far as trafficking is concerned. So I'm really hoping that, you know, locally and throughout the Central Valley as we go forward, that the different organizations and government systems that are in place will work with each other collaboratively. That's why we have coalitions to address human trafficking, because it has to be a network. It can't just be, you know, one person over here doing one thing and organization over here doing another thing. You can't hold on to those victims for very long because they, you know, their needs are so diverse. So we're hoping that, you know, everybody works together and policies are definitely set in place, but that they're very well organized. And so it's been great to see the many different organizations and just individual people, faith-based, just private citizens that are very engaged in this topic. It's not something that I've ever seen before. And so it's been quite something to watch it grow.
Turning to Councilmember Olivier, do you think this is an issue that legislation can address in any way, whether it's at the local level or state or nationally? Is there room from a policymaker's perspective to take a new look at this issue and try to craft new laws to aid law enforcement and aid victims' providers and try to address this issue at that level?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the first thing to keep in mind is that it's illegal to traffic human beings. So there are laws on the books. I mean, it's illegal to own slaves in the United States. The 13th Amendment takes care of that. So, I mean,
sentencing, those sorts of things.
Well, sure. And I mean, I don't think that these kinds of crimes are the first priority of law enforcement, whether it's at the local level, state level, or the federal level. I mean, the war on drugs is number one. It's paramount. That gets all the resources. Then we have, you know, murders and assaults, which you know, folks are still going to prison for that. But something like this, you know, we have to be creative. I don't know if throwing another law on the books is the answer to it. You know, there are laws out there in the city of Pittsburgh recently. They just passed a law that kind of regulates these massage parlors that we see popping up all over the valley. That I think maybe something like that might have some success. So those are the kinds of things that I'm looking at. I mean, yes, I guess we could pass laws, but will they work? I don't know. So I'm still in the stage where I'm looking and evaluating. I'm not saying that I'm against a new law, but it just seems like that you know, that's the easy way out too, isn't it? You know, oh, there ought to be a law. Let's pass a law. Oh, okay, we passed it. It's fixed. It won't be fixed. So I think that what Ron is talking about are these coalitions and meeting with people, maybe these diversion programs, anything that can help instead of just continuing to throw problems at the criminal justice system, which right now is overburdened and broke. So I can appreciate the creativity approach.
Ronnie, your thoughts on that issue?
Yeah, there are laws on the books on trafficking. So, you know, the only thing I think that we could possibly do is I think that we certainly want to increase the penalties on trafficking, and we certainly want to have some successful civil litigation that actually goes after the pocketbooks of traffickers. That would be great to have. But again, we as a society continue to write laws, write legislation, build prisons, you know, do this, do that, but that's just a Band-Aid. It's not actually addressing the issue. So addressing the issue, it's a social justice issue. It's a human rights violation, human trafficking. It's a human rights violation. So it's about understanding that component as well, as a culture and as a society, and coming to the place where no one will tolerate that behavior. It's not just as citizens, just as human beings, that we will not tolerate that type of behavior. And then therefore, and not only that, as consumers, whether we're purchasing commercial sex or we're purchasing coffee beans, as consumers, we don't tolerate that, that slave labor in anything. So we have a long road ahead of us. It's not a quick fix. You know, throwing a law on the book is a quick fix, and then it doesn't work anyway. So it's a long process. It's going to be years, and maybe we'll never see an actual end to human trafficking. But I think that we can certainly raise enough awareness and raise the consciousness level of our society and our culture so that we just won't tolerate it.
This being a human rights related issue and human rights related crimes, we're also talking about federal law. Have the feds been supportive of the efforts here locally in any way? I understand you had a U.S. attorney at your conference back in February. How is the federal government working locally to address this issue?
Well, the federal government is completely involved because they're actually funding me to address this issue. So the project that I'm working on is federally funded. And we have three other federal grant applications out there, and we're waiting on pins and needles to receive some kind of information, and hopefully we'll be approved for at least one of them, if not two. So definitely the feds are involved. They see Fresno and the Central Valley as a hub. So they've recognized that. I've been working very closely with our program officers and other folks in Washington, D.C. to make sure that Fresno's on the map and Fresno's on the national scene as far as trafficking is concerned. So we're definitely working together. And again, even the state level, they're definitely focusing on Fresno and the Central Valley. That's who's funding the Fresno Police Department's Human Trafficking Task Force. So certainly we are on the consciousness level as far as this trafficking.
Is there any thought, you just mentioned that the Central Valley is considered a hub. Is there any thought to why that is? Is it the agricultural base here? Is it the diverse population? Is it the immigrant population? Is it some other economic issue? Why is Central California considered a hub?
Well, I think all of that, that you just said, all of that. In addition, Central Valley it's not as urban as, say San Francisco or Los Angeles. It's a conservative valley, and it's just not something that we would ever think exists, in our beautiful valley, but yet it does. And also it's easy to transport people through the valley. We have, two large highways that connect, that run right through Fresno and the Central Valley, connecting Los Angeles and San Francisco. So it's easy to transport people back and forth. It's just definitely ripe for traffickers.
We are talking about the issue of human trafficking in the Valley today, and Ronna Bright joins us from the Central Valley Against Human Trafficking Organization and Central Valley Freedom Coalition. What is being done to provide services for those individuals that you did address? I think you said around 40 or so mm-hmm. this past year. What's being done to try to aid them in a transition to some sort of a normal life and freedom?
We have had quite a bit of success as far as rescuing and then providing services to victims of trafficking. Not all victims take advantage of that. That's not something that they may not be in a position to do. But we do have so many partners that we work with. So that would include, obviously my organization, Fresno County Economic Opportunities Commission. The Sanctuary and Youth Services provides shelter, advocacy, transportation for victims. We have Marjorie Mason Center, who is a partner of ours, and once again providing shelter to some victims of trafficking who may have domestic violence going on as well. We have Westside Family Preservation Services Network out in Huron, who's providing advocacy and support for victims. And then we also have just other organizations throughout, our region that we can tap into to kind of pull together a network for support for victims. One of the things that we lack locally is a standalone trafficking organization. And I think that we're a few years from being able to actually support locally just a standalone trafficking organization. So until we get to that point, then we all come together and pool our resources to be able to provide services.
Turning back to Councilmember Olivier, I think a lot of our listeners may be listening to this discussion today and thinking to themselves, well, this all sounds great, but I know what severe pressures the city and the county are under right now. Multiple floors of the jail are closed. There's inmates being released shortly after they're booked. And just in today's Fresno Bee, there's an article about the city of Fresno looking to address the automobile theft problem in the city by contracting with the Madera County Jail, which has excess capacity, and entering into a contract there. Is there, I don't want to say a case of misplaced priorities, but are we treating automobile theft as a bigger problem than human trafficking in this case? How do you address the ability, the capacity to be able to serve and to be able to provide housing in the jail for individuals who may be maybe facilitating the trafficking of individuals here in the city? Is it, well, well, if you steal a car, we'll ship you to Madera County, but if you're guilty of something like this, is there no room, or is there room?
Well, I think there's room. I think that if these people are picked up and arrested, depending on what they're charged with, we're going to house them. We're going to make them pay for their crimes. I mean, absolutely. As far as the auto theft thing goes, I mean, a couple weeks ago, something came out that said this is the capital of the United States for automobile theft. That is very embarrassing, and I think that that should not be tolerated. And I join my colleagues on the council and the administration. I mean, the police department, it's universal that Fresnans and don't want to be known as the automobile theft capital of essentially what, the world. So this is something that you're going to see movement on, and this is something that you're going to see action on. People are sick of their cars getting ripped off, so they're going to do something about that. We're going to do something about that. But I mean, absolutely. And along those same lines, no politician, no department head, no police chief wants to see pimps and human traffickers and bad guys and women walk. So like Ron has said, there's movement on this front too. I mean, we're not renting out a jail for pimps and human traffickers yet, but we're working on this, and it, like I said before, everyone is coming together on this at the same time. I think it's a great opportunity.
Well, again, we thank you very much. We're just about out of time. We'd like to thank Councilmember Clint Olivier from the Fresno City Council, District 7, for joining us today. Also, Ronna Bright. She is the project coordinator with the group Central Valley Against Human Trafficking and the Central Valley Freedom Coalition. Ronna, if people want more information about your organization, what can they do if they want to assist in some way?
Well, I think we can certainly pull out the human trafficking hotline, 888-373-7888.
All right. Again, thank you very much for joining us today. Clint Olivier and Ronna Bright talking about human trafficking. Stay tuned in just a moment. An uplifting story about a local nonprofit aiding youth with intellectual disabilities, and an inspiring story coming up in a moment.
Support for Quality of Life comes from Chevron and Avicennia Wellness Center, online at avecinia.com.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of today's edition of Quality of Life. When you hear the phone numbers, please don't call. Hello and welcome back to Quality of Life. My name is Joe Moore. For around a quarter of a century, one Central Valley nonprofit has been helping to change attitudes and create opportunities for people with intellectual disabilities. You may have seen their highly choreographed gymnastic routines at halftimes of local sporting events, but they've had an equally big impact outside of the Valley, spreading their message to countries from China to South Africa. I'm talking about the group Break the Barriers, and we're joined in studio in this segment with organization co-founder Debbie Hergenrader. Debbie, welcome to our program today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We're also joined in our studio by one of Break the Barriers staff and a member of the international travel team for the organization and a Special Olympic world champion, Jared Schmidt. Jared, welcome to Quality of Life.
Welcome.
I want to take a moment and talk about Break the Barriers and give some context to its background and how it came about. You've been an organization since the mid-1980s, serving youth of all different abilities and special needs throughout Central California. Where did this organization come from? What was its genesis?
Well, my sister Kathy, that a lot of people know, especially if you're in their Special Olympic world, she was Fresno County's first Special Olympic athlete. She has Down syndrome, and I'm homegrown. I grew up in the Tower District and attended McLean High School in Fresno State. And I was a competitive gymnast, and my husband played for the Yankees. He was a catcher and center fielder, and that's Steve Hergenrader. And through all of our competing, we knew the benefits and value of sports, but growing up, we found that the opportunities were very limited for someone like my sister Kathy. So she didn't have an opportunity to develop the gifts that she had anywhere in the public arena. And so that became a prayer to our family to have a place where all people can go and where siblings can go together and not be divided up, and where it can become that place to develop the gifts and abilities that everybody's been given, no matter what ability level they're on.
Break the Barriers has been so active in our community, but even more so beyond just Central California. Your organization has had a global impact and has reached thousands of throughout America and beyond. How did that international element of the organization come about, and the tours and international programs that you do every year? How did that arise? How did a small organization in Fresno grow to be something that is recognized across the globe?
Well, we started in Fresno, and we thought, how are we going to show the world that all people belong together? And my parents were former ice skaters with Ice Capades, and as far as competing in gymnastics, I loved the performance aspect, and then I grew up watching old 16-millimeter projector film of my parents, and I thought, we'll put together a performing team of various abilities, kids and adults that can flip and fly and spin and dance, whether they're in a wheelchair, have legs, one leg, two legs, and just bring everybody together. And when we were praying, how are we going to show the world, we started in Fresno, and then all of a sudden, we get calls to go to Romania. And then after Romania, we ended up in China. And we were in Romania three times, 3 years, and then in China. And because of being in Romania, they now have certified teachers working with autistic children in their orphanages, and that's because of the team being there and building a relationship with them. And in China, it's a one-child law, and because our team was in China, we met families that chose to keep their one child with Down syndrome, and now they have a Down syndrome society in Xiamen, China. In the whole Fujian province, they've had conferences, Down syndrome conferences, and it's because of the team being there, and it's just amazing how the small team from Fresno and one prayer we found out is a prayer that's been shared by many here in our community and then also throughout the world. And the prayer is every mother and father's prayer that their child will be accepted in this world and that they'll find purpose in this world. And I think that's the magic of the program and why doors are opening up. We bring wonderful people like Jared Schmidt, who's the world champ that I brought today, and he amazes them with his ability. And government leaders are saying, because you use sports and athletics, we could see the potential of our kids. We never saw that before. So now we know how far to shoot when we're going for improvement in our world as far as meeting the needs of our community. And so it's all by letting people see what can happen when you provide that opportunity and allow people to come together.
Let's turn now to Jared Schmidt. He is a member of the international travel team and part of Break the Barriers for some time now, and a Special Olympics world champion. Jared, what's your favorite part of Break the Barriers?
My favorite part of Break the Barriers is the kids. And the kids always touch my heart, and I see a lot of disabled people, and made me feel happy inside my heart. And I love it a lot, so much, and I love working there.
Now, Jared, you've been part of the Special Olympics for some time now, in fact, a world champion with Special Olympics. Tell our listeners more of your accomplishments, what you've done with Special Olympics.
Like a lot of sports, and swimming, track, baseball, soccer, and I compete with them and all those people, and it's pretty fun, and I like cheering on them and give them high fives with them, and they like my family too.
Jared, tell them where you went to get your world titles. Where did you go and what'd you win in?
My world titles, I went to Dublin, Ireland, and I compete for gymnastics. The whole story about that, I was going to swimming. They didn't choose swimming, and they wanted me to compete for gymnastics. And I went over there, and I won all six medals. And I got all golds over there. And the next Special Olympics, World Games, I was competing at Boise, Idaho, for a downhill skier, and I won our three silvers over there.
We're talking about Break the Barriers today on Quality of Life, and we're joined by organization co-founder and executive director Debbie Hergenrader, and also Jared Schmidt, a Break the Barriers member and employee and also a Special Olympian. Debbie, turning back to you, there's maybe some confusion out there. Special Olympics, Break the Barriers, these are two different organizations and actually two very different concepts, are they not? They're complementary, but they're different in some way.
Yes, yes, and there's been confusion in our community. You know, we support both, because you've heard Jared and you heard about my sister who and my mom started the swimming at Frank H. Ball Playground, you know, on West Side Fresno. And, you know, we are very close to that. And because of that, you know, people would say, we just supported you and donated to Break the Barriers today and wrote a check out to Special Olympics. And we said, well, that's a great thing that you just did, but it's not going to break the barriers because it's two separate nonprofit corporations. And Break the Barriers now and has now has changed to the terminology that's been passed. Just this past October, President Obama signed a law, it's called Rosa's Law, to remove the word mental retardation from all of our textbooks and from every written material to get it out of society because that turned into a bad name-calling name. And so now the word is intellectual disabilities or a person with intellectual disabilities. So Special Olympics is for the athletes that have intellectual disabilities, and Break the Barriers is for those athletes and their brothers and sisters and anybody. And so there is a difference between the two, but we certainly support and are active, you know, in the Special Olympics because that is a very important part of our life also.
You just mentioned that law that President Obama signed last year. Mm-hmm. Have you seen attitudes change in both in America? And then I'm also curious to hear about attitudes abroad. You mentioned going to Romania. You mentioned going to China. Mm-hmm. How have the attitudes changed in the since 1985 when you founded the organization here in California and then also abroad? Has there been progress in certain ways?
You know, the progress is slow. We still hear people today, if they're not in our world of Special Olympics or Break the Barriers, they're still using the stereotypes and the terms, and we people will come in and we'll say we're glad that to hear that you work with those people with handicaps and this and that, and you know we kind of have a saying the wrong thing with good intentions is better than nothing at all, and so we still have a lot of work to do here in the good old USA, but the good old USA is awesome by passing these laws. And the Americans with Disabilities Act has made a huge change and a huge step forward, but there's still more to do. And the Rosa's Law, same thing. They're getting rid of the negative connotations that come with the words mental retardation. And in our university, Fresno State, City College, Fresno Unified, we're seeing the terminology is already gone. They're already moving on that. So we're seeing that happen. But if you're not in the world of education, you would not know that. And so it's great to be on the radio to maybe educate people on that we need to rise up and rise above all of those labels that we have for one another because they do definitely put barriers in our head. And in traveling to these other countries, you know, we went to Romania right after 2020, had this big program on the horrible, barbaric treatment of children with disabilities in these orphanages. And when we went there, the first place we went, which of any of our traveling, was in an orphanage in Romania, in Bucharest. And when we went out into the back, because they wouldn't allow us to come in, and we saw children that were plopped like plants, you know, and it was their sunning time. And when I told our interpreter, I said, we're here to meet their care provider. Can we meet them and can we, you know, interact with these kids? Because we saw the Down syndrome faces or the faces with cerebral palsy. And the care provider that we met, she knew English. And she said, no, you're not here for my children, only for the other children. And we ended up performing in front. And the woman finally brought her 19 kids out in front. And I asked her if they can dance with us because we always take an interactive song, and she was crying. And she said, today my children can dance with all the children. And then she took me back into her room, and in the back part of the orphanage, it was hotter. It didn't have all the beautiful Disney murals or Noah's Ark on the walls. And here's this one room with 19 mats on the floor. And she asked me, she said, "Do you pray?" And I said, "Yes, I do." She said, "Well, will you pray I don't get sick? Because the government has no backup for me. I only get Sunday off. And if I get sick, no one comes in to touch or change my children when they're wet." And I said, "How long are your working days?" And she says, "Oh, 24 hours. I sleep here." And I said, "How many years have you been doing this?" And she said, 26 years. And I said, "Well, then will you pray for me? I have your faithfulness and endurance." And loving this woman and just knowing she was doing, loving these children so well without help. And here media was coming in to highlight the negative, but not showing them what they can do. And from then on, we always take specialists with us from Fresno community, the Central Valley, to connect, to get a relationship with them. And that's how the children that were autistic, those were the tougher ones. They weren't treated as well because they didn't know how. But how do you judge these women or these people, care providers that have donated their life? Same thing in China, same thing in South Africa. They care for them very well, but the knowledge is limited because nobody has come in. And, you know, and the pride is there, and they're used to people coming in and beating them over the head. But we come in with our team and just love on them, and we raise the funds ourselves. And we're raising funds right now. We're invited to go back to a different country in South Africa. We're actually Central Africa this time. And so we're raising funds, and we don't go through that effort unless they connect us with the three points of the triangle, which we found, Department of Disability, Department of Education, and Department of Religion. Because if anybody's doing anything, it's a humanitarian or a missionary. And if we can go there and love on them and encourage them and shine a light on them that's going to bring the news media, because here's these Americans, what are they doing here? Then all of a sudden, we have already seen great impact from our little normal Fresno Clovis, you know, performing team. What can happen when we go there? And for me, it's easy. I just hit the music button, and then we give our testimony in between, and lives are changed. Government laws are being changed. Now in China, they get a stipend from the government if they choose to keep their baby with Down syndrome, and it's all from this little team that went there from Fresno, and it's just unbelievable. But Jared knows. Jared that's here, he's felt it. It's like a God qualifies the team. As soon as that button's pushed, he qualifies them to just soften hearts and open eyes. And we're just blessed to be a part of this.
Debbie Hergenrader, a co-founder and executive director of Break the Barriers, joins us in our studio today, as well as Jared Schmidt, another part of the Break the Barriers family, and also one of 10 global messengers for Special Olympics. Jared, tell us about some of the things you've been able to do as one of these global messengers and some of the places you've been able to go and some of the people and organizations you've been able to talk to.
I train how to speak speeches a lot. It's my mom is my coach, giving speeches. It's pretty awesome. I speak like all about my life. And I went to this camp called Camp for the Stars, and it's for foreign natters, and the school I went to is Fatty Christian School. I train with them, and it's pretty fun. It's like bears. It's all different kind of people. It's like mix, like Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, and I play with them, and it's pretty fun.
It's quite an honor, and we're really excited to have you with us today, and Debbie, with you with us today. What you mentioned, you're working on raising the funds to do another international trip. What do you see as the future for Break the Barriers? Is this something that can grow chapters beyond Fresno? Do you have ambitions to do that, or is the focus to remain in the Central San Joaquin Valley and spread your work and your mission throughout throughout the world from the home base here in California?
Well, our board of directors, we've talked about this quite a bit as far as franchising out. And then the way it's been working, though, is these countries are coming into Fresno. And what's awesome about that is we have just a rich, just like the soil, rich community of nonprofits and our children's hospital and our education, where we plug these country leaders, come here and we give them a tour at the children's hospital, and we connect them with educators. Whatever their need is, we connect them with whatever their need is, whether it's autism specialist or deaf-blind specialist. We will connect them so we can continue the relationship. But they've been coming to see Break the Barriers, which is pretty awesome. So I don't know if we're now called an International Ability Center over there at 8555 North Cedar. And so it's seeing that and hearing that from other people, it just cracks me up, because here it started in our backyard on old bed mattresses and carpets. But I'll tell you what, you know, I know that God loves his children, and he loves the prayers of moms and dads. And what we're seeing is a movement of love and acceptance that the world needs in general. And I just know that's what has been the magic, so to speak, and why people wanted to come on in. I think this being on the radio is also a chance, because people still, the news media, the paper, the newspapers, the TV, they always will go to Jared, you know, because he's got the charm. Or they always go to Megan, who's an amazing gymnast on one leg. She only has one leg. Or they go to Gary, who's in a wheelchair, who does a headstand with his wheelchair on his bottom and he's upside down. Now figure that one out, radio listeners. But they miss the magic of inclusion. And the inclusion is... And when it's successful inclusion, the division is seamless. When you can't see the barrier between the two, when our staff are trained to work with those athletes that come on in, like in swimming, if they can pass all the levels, they move to a different part of the pool where maybe a brother or sister might be afraid of the water. We have all kinds of gadgets and gizmos and fun things to get them to fall in love. But we are trained to work with all abilities. And so, again, it's not just... You know, our special needs populations, which I consider myself a special need population, and it's for everyone. And so our message starts with a question. Jared, what is the question when we go around the world, when we line up? What is the question we ask everybody?
We give who is more disabled?
Yeah, and that's something to think about. Who is more disabled? Someone who can talk and is a friend to all people, or someone who can talk but only uses their words to hurt people? Who's more disabled? Someone who's blind and loves everyone because they see no differences, or someone who can see but all they see are differences? And we have sayings that go on and on and on and on. And who are we to draw that line between who's able and who's disabled? When Mr. Schmidt here, he tells me how to use my cell phone. Jared. Yeah. On the way over, he was helping me with it. And, yes. You know, he's got so many gifts and abilities. I cannot touch his gift of love and unconditional love that he has for everybody. And this guy, you can't get angry. If he is angry, he forgives you in a second. That's hard for me. You know, he's got so many abilities. So who are we to draw that line? So Break the Barriers is just that. We're out in the community to break the barriers and bring outreach and education here at home and around the world, and then provide an international ability center where everyone can come, and everybody can come, starting at newborn through senior citizens. So we can say, like Social Security, we work with from the womb to the tomb.
Well, it's certainly a very inspirational message, and again, we thank you for joining us today. Our guests have been Debbie Hergenrader, Executive Director and co-founder of the Fresno-based nonprofit Break the Barriers, which works with children and adults of all abilities. Joining us in the studio, we also have Jared Schmidt, a member of Break the Barriers International Travel Team and a world champion Special Olympics athlete and one of 10 global messengers for Special Olympics. Jared, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And Debbie, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
This is Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. And for audio engineer Marv Allen, Tracy Sharman, and Don Weaver, our production manager, Tracy's our producer, I'm Joe Moore. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back next week with another program. This is Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Quality of Life comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.